I'm not a computer science. I didn't go to college with computer scientists, but I get the feeling that people who like IT don't like doing homework. It's just a feeling I get. and when you face them, of course, every application needs a disaster recovery plan.
Yeah.
That's just the homework that people don't like doing. So they might not do it. They might skip homework and not do it. Or if you really tell them you've got to get your homework done, I've had a feeling they do it on the school bus and the quality is not so great. And that's before you even get to thinking about have we tested it, because you really need to make sure that in the moment that the unplanned happens, you know what you're doing. So that's why this topic of disaster recovery planning is so important to me, because it sits in this combination of you've got to get the defense right, but you've got to plan for the unpredictable.
Welcome to Stay Cognizant, our podcast about the people, ideas, and technology that will help you get ahead and stay ahead. I'm Pamela Axtell. Hello, and welcome to Stay Cognizant. Today, I am joined by my colleague, Gisela Dauer, as well as one of our clients, Damian Bunyan. And Damian, to kick things off, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and kind of set us up for the conversation today?
Well, I try and do my best, and in doing so, I'll try and set some context. I'm Damian. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. I work for an energy company based out of Germany, but we're a global organization. We're involved in power generation, but also in what we would call the midstream gas business. We have operations in many countries. And if you think of our LNG business, that's pretty much a global business. I have the privilege of being the CIO for the organization. And maybe what's important to note, because I think we'll touch on it, is in many ways we're an old organization, but in many ways we're a young organization. So the company was founded in 2016. We were previously part of a much larger end-to-end energy organization, and we were carved out of that organization. And although that was a painful experience to go through a carve out, it presented a unique set of opportunities for my team and I in IT to get rid of all the things we didn't like and install all of the things we wanted to do. We needed to have a vision as to where we wanted to go. And in a world of AI, that is standing us in very good stead at the moment.
Okay. I like you, the way you talked about a young and an old organization. And I think, you know, one of the things that has always been a challenge for companies in the energy sector is disaster recovery. I know we're going to spend, you know, a lot of time today talking about that. And I wonder if you can, you know, set the stage for us before even talking about, you know, kind of the real life use case that we're going to dive into today. Talk to us a little bit about what disaster recovery means for you and your team.
We could go down that rabbit hole for a long time now. So first of all, you're right. We are involved in what society would call critical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So we need to do things in the most robust, secure way possible. And that starts with running the IT estate in the most resilient way you can. And if you ask my team what Damian's top three priorities were, they'd tell you it's resilience, then it's resilience. And if there's any time left, we think about resilience. So they're the topics. But it's not only making sure that everything works and that you're as secure as you possibly can. You also need to spend time working out what you will do when the unplanned happens. And that's this, you use this phrase, disaster recovery. Mm-hmm. Now, when we were separated from our previous sister organization or parent organization, we were at that point kind of given the chance to keep some service agreements with that company and they would run things for us. And we said, no, we're not going to do that. We want to run our own estate and be in charge of our own destiny. At which point they said, ah, Damian, but it's going to take you a long time to build a data center. And so the core of our IT story is one of saying, well, in 2016, you don't build a data center because you've got the cloud. So we were freed from this debate about should we go into the cloud with what and how? And we turned it around and said, right, how are we going to do it? Mm-hmm. Back then, the currency that we were thinking in was applications. So we need to take all the applications we've got and take them out of a data center and put them into the cloud. So the obvious question was, how do you monitor that? And we used this highly sophisticated tool called Excel. And in Excel, we had, or we tried to have all our applications. And at the very beginning, my team said to me, but Damien, we don't know how many applications we've got. So how do I do resilience properly, or even disaster recovery properly, if I don't actually know what I've got? And that process of going from what we had and really pulling the plug meant that by the end, we knew what we had. And that was a real gift for me. Yeah. The second gift was that as we started migrating from left to right, we did need to spend a bit of money and we needed a bit of support from our colleagues for user acceptance testing. And 33% of the time, my colleagues in the thing that we sometimes mistakenly call the business, my colleague said to me, oh, Damien, forget it. We don't really need it. So a third of my estate, we were managing, fighting and wrestling with all the time, but we didn't really need it. So not only do I have a complete list of what I've got, I've also got a cleaner estate and it's smaller, which also helps me to be more resilient. And going into the cloud is brilliant because it brings you structure, automation, all of those things, availability, almost, because that's how it comes out of the box, much, much more than we had. And the number of incidents that we face has dropped dramatically. And that allows me to turn my focus to the topic of disaster recovery. Now, I'm not a computer scientist. I didn't go to college with computer scientists, but I get the feeling that people who like IT don't like doing homework. It's just a feeling I get. And when we face them, of course, every application needs a disaster recovery plan. That's just the homework that people don't like doing. So they might not do it. They might skip homework and not do it. Or if you really tell them you've got to get your homework done, I've had a feeling they do it on the school bus and the quality is not so great. And that's before you even get to thinking about, have we tested it? Because you really need to make sure that in the moment that the unplanned happens, you know what you're doing. That's why they're there. So that's why this topic of disaster recovery planning is so important to me, because it sits in this combination of you've got to get the defense right, but you've got to plan for the unpredictable. And yeah, that's maybe the birth of the story that we're about to talk about in this podcast. Because why wouldn't I ask myself as a CIO if I could use artificial intelligence to do my job better?
Right. Yeah. So you've been on this journey from Excel to, which I suspect is where a lot of our, you know, clients have started, right? Because that was really kind of the repository for data. Now you're moved into the cloud. And now, as you just said, you start to really think about how AI can help make this process, you know, even more accurate, more efficient, you know, and really enable your experts to do what they're great at and not get mired in some of the, you know, more labor-intensive parts of the process. So maybe now you can start to talk a little bit about the initial challenge that you wanted AI to help you overcome, and how I know that similar, just like Cognizant, you have distributed teams, you have teams in India, specifically, I think in this case, a team in Bangalore, who started to think about what the architecture needed to look like to support the ability for AI to come in and help you address it. Maybe you can, you know, start the process for us.
Yeah, maybe let me start by telling a second story and then the two stories come together. I'm just the CIO of a large energy company, and I am pretty convinced that this thing called AI is coming at us like a train. This is not just the next thing on the hype curve. This is coming and it's going to have a big impact. And it's not necessarily the case that everybody around me in the organization believes that or even wants to believe that. But I think it is. But there's no point in me just saying it. I need to, some people need me to prove that it's happening. While I'm telling everybody else that AI could help them, why don't I set about proving the point? Because it just helps me.
That's right.
So I was looking for a use case that helps me demonstrate to all of my colleagues, look, it's really helping me do my job at a different level. Maybe there's something in there for you. And I explained this to Gisela when we talked a few weeks ago and said, look, I'd been in October of last year on a journey to India. We are great fans of the sourcing options that we can get there. There's just a skill base in India that we don't have available to us. And we work hard with a small number of technology companies. And like every tech company in October last year, everybody was talking to me on that trip about AI, it's brilliant. That's great. Thank you very much. Damien, you just need to tell us what you want us to do for your organization and we'll do it for you. And I said to each of them, what I want is a use case for me, alongside all of the other use cases in the company. I want one for me as CIO.
You want to be client zero, just like we've tried to do at Cognizant.
Yeah, I want to be client zero. Yeah. By the way, you're trying to take money out of my budget to help everybody else left and right. So come on, can I just have one? But the most important bit is that it allows me to demonstrate that I can practice what I preach.
That's right.
And we had this discussion and the initial reaction when we went and talked to talented teams amongst your competitors, they all said, Damien, that's brilliant. You're right. Customer zero, let's do it. What do you want? And I looked at them all and said, hey, come on, guys, you're a tech company. Yeah.
Tell me.
Yeah, you must have a CIO yourself. What does she want? What does he want? Let's do it. I think, okay, we'll think about it. And my very last visit in that week was to your colleagues in Cognizant. And they also talked to me about AI. It's great. It can help the business. But actually, there were people in the room who I was learning from. They started explaining to me in words that I understood what agentic means, what the power of an agent would look like. And they moved my thinking on in that session. And I was very grateful. And then I came along with my, hey, it's my budget. I'm customer zero. I don't want to help everybody else if I don't have one for little me. And they said, well, tell us what you want. And then I said to them, do you know what? I'm so grateful for the education hour we just had. I'm going to give you a use case. And then I told them about disaster recoveries. The kids don't like doing it on the bus, going to school. And so I don't always have a DR plan for every application. And sometimes when we do have one, we find the quality is not good enough. So I started talking with them and saying, well, I'd like AI to help me. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'd need a report to show me which kids haven't done their homework at all. But secondly, more importantly, give a grade to all of the DR plans that we have. And we had a two-minute little excourse in the meeting where they said, oh, Damien, you need to tell us what a good DR plan looks like, to which I said, guys, you're technologists. Yeah. Work out what it looks like. And so help me give a grade to all of them. Mm-hmm. And they took that because it was a use case. We gave that to them. And I was astonished how quickly the team was able to turn it round so that you could simply put the DR plan into, let's call it the tool, and it just reads the document for you. It gives it a grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Germans have a school classification. It gives it a grade and it tells you where the things are which are resulting in a poorer grade than you might expect. And it astonished me how quickly they were able to produce that. And yeah, I mean, fast forward to 2 weeks ago. So they'd shown me the minimum viable product just before Christmas. Fast forward 2 weeks ago, I'm back in Bangalore. I make my last visit to the Cognizant team and I sit in front of the group who are saying, da-da, there's your tool. It's finished. And by the way, because we had a little bit of time over, we've even taken the thought further. And how would it be if the AI agent was able to do this, this, and this for you? And at that point, what I've got, Pamela, is I've got a use case that is a really powerful demonstration of how a large language model with well-grounded data can allow an organization to interpret its information in mm-hmm. a robust and sophisticated way.
Yeah. I'll turn it over to Dijel in a second, but that's such a great use case for AI, and it really does do a tremendous job of what your aim was, which was to prove to your colleagues like the power of it, right? Because to your point, there's any number of areas within a large organization that could use it in the same way. Gisella, I'll turn over to you for, you know, a little more, go a little deeper here with Damian.
Yeah, thank you. I listened carefully to you, Damian, talking about the tool, and I would like to know what specific AI technologies and or methodologies were employed to ensure that this tool, as you said, could not only check and improve disaster recovery plans, but also make suggestions. It would be very interesting.
Now, we're going to go full circle now with this answer. And by the way, I'm not a computer scientist, but in essence, we are using large language models. So it is really interesting. The team tested the application that they created with a variety of different models. Some are newer, some are older, some are bigger, some are smaller, some are expensive, some are inexpensive. And the normal models that we talk about in IT were the normal models that they've settled on. And so the model discussion was really interesting. Then you needed to ground the agent in a certain amount of information. Mm-hmm. And we're so sophisticated, because we're so gifted in Uniper, we used Excel. And we collected in Excel. These are all the kind of things that if you were the teacher giving this thing a grade, these are the things that you would look at. Is the structure the right structure that you would expect? Is it laid out in the way that it's laid out? Are all the sections filled out? You know, if you get an application form from a potential new starter, but they don't write anything in what are your sports and hobbies, well, then you're not going to give it such a high score. It checks for things like where we need the name of the application owner. Is the name there? Is the email address there? Is the telephone number of the agent there? And you'd be surprised how many times that's not the case. And so it runs through this. And the beauty is that if somebody came along and said, that's really great what you've used there for the grounding, but what about this? Well, you just simply add that as the next file, and the machine just rereads all of the use cases and gives you a new valuation. So I kind of get this real time, mm-hmm. all the time. And once we've given as a test a number of use cases that we'd already rated ourselves, some as acceptable, some as best in class, some as not acceptable, and the machine that we built corresponds with us. So you ground the agent in certain things around, you know, we expect all sections to be filled in. This is the format we expect. We expect the following key fields to be populated. We expect you to check with the document versus what we've got in service now as another bit of the grounding. And then bang, you run it. And it's the simplicity actually even explaining it. This isn't overly complicated. It's yeah. just the tooling allows us to do these kind of things now. And you can extrapolate that use case very quickly to legal, business mm-hmm. continuity management. You know, when we're running our power stations, the amount of documents that we have to look at, you know, that are in locked cupboards is just incredible. And this type of technology just allows us to analyze what we've got in real time.
I heard you use the term real time a lot and simple. I wonder if you can, are there metrics that you've tracked that really get to the outcomes and improvements that you've seen? You know, how are you talking about it internally too, to other folks to help them understand what this has actually resulted in for your team?
That's where we are right now. So this okay. is pretty stuff that's hot off the press. Yeah. I am convinced this is going to allow me to get to, you know, an A star grade for all of my disaster recovery plans really quickly. You know, yeah. the IT folks working for me are looking and thinking, oh my goodness, Damien's done something to help us here. Yeah, because it's highlighting, yeah, I might be missing a telephone number, or it's highlighting that the service owner name in service now is not the same as on the document. And so mm-hmm. quickly are able to get this refresh, and we just keep running and running. It's not like you have to keep rereading and rereading as a human. We just keep rerunning the agent until we get a score that we're happy with. Yeah. And then the next level, hopefully, Pamela, is that we get to the point that the model is so comfortable with what a good DR plan looks like that we just ask it to write the next one for the next application that comes up. Right. That's the kind of holy grail, if you like, for me. When I was in Bangalore talking with the team who were building this the last time, I also took my chief procurement officer with me on the trip. And you know, he's just watching and listening and saying, whoa, hang on, have you just said that you do this? Would that mean if I think of it in my world that I could do this? And we're all looking and saying, pretty much the same. Oh, my goodness. So the main thing that I really wanted was this: Damien believes and can prove passionately that this has an impact. And it's not at that point a use case that means we're losing people. It means it's a use case that's allowing people to do their job at a much better level.
That's right. Yeah.
And they can concentrate on it. Yeah. So for me, it's just a use case that we talk passionately about. And what it's now leading to, and I hadn't told you this before we were coming together, is that because the team had spare time, it didn't take as long to develop, the team have then started looking at, let's call it almost a disaster management agent. So they're saying, you know, we're sitting here and suddenly the phone rings and the SAP system's not working. Well, you just put into your Copilot, the SAP system's not working. What should I do? And it goes off into ServiceNow and your DR plant, pulls it back and says, right, step one, contact this individual. Yeah. If this individual says yes, then you do this. If they say no, you do this. And it starts allowing us to automate the actual usage of these things if we ever get to the case of having them. And the hope is that it's a very rare use case. So the human being's forgotten anyway what they're supposed to do because this never happens. But we've planned for it and we've got it there. So what I'm starting to see is the teams talking with each other and saying, well, if we can get that far, the next use case might be this, and the one after that maybe something even smarter.
Mm-hmm. Gisella, I'll hand it off to you.
Yeah. So I heard you talking previously about that it's possible to have an AI architect at Uniper caring for this disaster recovery plans, creating them. I wonder whether there are any primary technical or, let's say, operational challenges you anticipate, and how do you plan to address them?
I think the short answer to that would be no. Do I see any, say, killer issues that are going to make life difficult? No, I don't.
That's good.
And there's one very big reason for that. And it was the reason I wanted to describe my job in the context of being carved out of another organization.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an accidental CIO. I never thought I was going to be a CIO, but they made me CIO. The best decision I made as CIO was to go into the cloud. If I went all the way back to 2016, I'd do it again. The second best decision that we made as a tech team was to only go into one. Yeah. We talked all the time about resilience. If you have two clouds, the likelihood that something will break or the connectivity breaks and it causes you an issue is quite high. So I have more resilience in many ways, oddly, because I'm only in one cloud. I know I've got I have a risk that I have to manage, but my availability statistics are much better. But then when it comes to data, so that could have been the risk, Gisella, that you want to ground your query in information that are in different locations. You know, just imagine I had some of it some DR plans in this cloud, some in that cloud, some on-premise. You know, then it becomes very difficult. But because we've agreed that we're going to put our data in one place, that was a real enabler for the discussion. You, of course, have to be very cognizant about regulations, data protection. We are dealing with, you know, email addresses and names and telephone numbers, but at the end, we're not talking about millions of customers here. We're talking about internal data. So as we build this, you have to be cognizant of that fact. And again, the point I made to you earlier is this is about making the lives of the people working with me better because they get a co-pilot to help them do their job better. So there's not even any emotional resistance. We're doing things that allow people to do things that they might have done on the bus on the way to school, yeah, or not at all, yeah. And it frees them up to do the other things that they'd really like to do. So for me, it's just a really wonderful use case all in itself. But do I see any tech restrictions other than, you know, asking two technologists which large language model should we use? And you're going to get three answers. You know, at that point, it's the use case that's most important. And if ChatGPT version whatever gives me a slightly better result than ChatGPT version 3, actually, I'm not overly worried right now, because any large language model moves me on so much further forward that, you know, I've already got what I needed. Making a really great solution even more perfect, I don't need to worry about that.
I want to shift like to 5 degrees to the left of talking really purely about disaster recovery. And I wonder what, you know, how the sort of evolving regulatory environment around AI generally, and certainly as it could relate to the energy industry, but also, you know, you've mentioned a couple times you were spun off from E.ON. You have sort of a unique ownership structure. So what are the complications of sort of keeping on top of corporate expectations, what's happening in governments where, you know, you need to be concerned about regulations? How does all of that work as sort of an additional thing to think about as you're continuing to leverage AI?
Let me give you two answers to that. First of all, I describe myself as a lucky CIO. This carve out freed us up from asking, should we do something? To making us ask the question, how are we going to do it? And I mean, literally, I took the decision, we will pull the plug on the data center on a certain date. And that stopped us having the debates that lots of tech teams have, should we do that here? Or maybe this is sensitive, can we do that? No, we worked out what we had to do in order to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we were maybe in the moment that we were told we were being carved out, that's where we got lucky, if you like. You then ask a potentially sort of sensitive geopolitical question. AI is being viewed at differently in different bits of the world. We have the privilege of being based out of Europe, and of course, what the European Union wants, and maybe even that's kind of the highest bar that you have to jump over. If that's the privilege of where we live and work, so be it. And what I've always learned is, with any of these audit requirements that we might have imposed on us, let's then say to everybody in the company, we will live up to the highest expectations that are brought upon us geographically, and we will deploy those everywhere. And, you know, if I look at the EU AI Act, it's pretty much saying that as an organization, we need an overview of what AI tools we've got. We call it the free-for-all, where everyone's doing everything. Well, okay, that's okay. Now, I may have somebody operating in a country where that's not really needed, but yeah, come, let's just get everybody to live up to that level of expectation. The technology is the same everywhere anyway, so I don't want switching on and off, you know, just because one jurisdiction says yes and the other says no. It's fast moving. The regulations don't move, however, as quickly as the technological opportunities. And that requires, I think, an amount of common sense when you're looking at these things. It's clear, you know, what people are worried about when it comes to generative AI and not. And so the example I've given you isn't a threatening one. It's not a self-driving car that we're trying to work out, is this working or not? The kind of the first steps into really understanding if generative AI can make a difference for us. And then, like, maybe last but not least, artificial intelligence in its broadest sense isn't something that's new. We've been in the energy industry using it for 25 years. So it's not new to us. We have an engineering bias in our brains, which allows us to think about these things because it's not so complicated in the mathematics behind it.
I want to go back to the beginning of our conversation, and you shared this story of kind of chatting with folks in the tech consulting space to, you know, start to unpack what you could do with AI and how different people might help, and the choice to partner with Cognizant. What is it about Cognizant, you know, both in your initial exploration and now over time as the partnership has played out? What are the specific aspects of the way that Cognizant has collaborated with you that, you know, make you continue to feel like we are the right partner and, you know, really have kind of helped you to advance to the place you've gotten to so quickly?
The relationship that we have with you started as we were already on this cloud journey, so this exit from the data center. By then, back in 2015-16, when we took the decision, none of the major players in the in the Cognizant space had ever really done anything like that. Mm-hmm. And we had always traditionally been heavily outsourced, but we were looking at people saying, well, we don't know how to do it, but you can pay us to help you do it if you'd like this exit. And at that point, although we were heavily outsourced, we sort of kind of took that back in-house a little bit, such that we built some subject matter expertise in the team. Now, the team realized over time that they couldn't manage this cloud application, set of applications. It's a 24/7 business. And they hit upon a working relationship with you guys at Cognizant that built trust. So you gave us a group of technologists who understood what needed doing. They built the relationship, and we trust you implicitly to help us 24/7 run our cloud state. Yeah. Now, we took the very good decision that we've gone in with Microsoft. Yeah, so it's very obvious what sets of tools we use together. And now along comes the next level of co-pilots and agents. And the team, my team, your team, they talk with each other time. They just understand all of these things.
Yeah.
But it really was then, as I arrived in India, and it really was in October, and I'm speaking to everybody with this, can I have something? And people say, yeah, and tell me what you want. It was just in this meeting with Cognizant where there were people in the room who were able to engage at least with me in a way that enriched my understanding. So it's a people business. It is not a commodity business. It's a people business. And I was back there again in February talking to the same people, and the world, everybody's moved on. Yeah, everybody's kind of moving forward at the same space, but I'm still having, for me, really great educational discussions, plus we're sharing these use cases and we're benefiting from it. And of course, when the developer who developed this for me gets to demonstrate it to his European CIO what they've done, and my team sometimes criticize me for not smiling enough, so I should ask maybe a nod to self in this call. And the team were just looking at me and they were all saying, have you just seen that? Damien's smiling. I was just smiling from ear to ear. Because they were able to exceed my expectations. You know, Gisella, you asked me what technology was behind this. When I asked for it, I didn't know. Yeah, but they had real fun in showing me what it was and how they built it at a level that I could understand. So, you are not alone in the space that you are, but you are helping us do things that we are yet to try and potentially do with other folks. They all want to try and help, and I'm sure they can all help. But this story is very much a Uniper and a Cognizant story.
It's great to hear, and especially to hear you use the word trust, which I think is one of the key factors when you think about AI, both from an end user perspective, but certainly also from a client perspective, right? I think we find that trust is the critical element.
Yeah, I have nailed very firmly into my IT strategy that we want to partner. I don't want multiple relationships with multiple organizations. I can't manage all that. We only have a small number. But at the end, it's not about a relationship between Damien, a CIO, and an executive vice president somewhere in the Cognizant family. It's at the level that the doing gets done. And I can see at the level that the doing gets done that the people are working with each other. And it's collaborative. It needs to be kind of on an eye level. And what's nice in this story is I get to profit from it and share that inside my organization. But then I get the double whammy of you coming to me and saying, well, let's do a podcast and we can share the nice story to everybody else. Well, hey, we do that with pleasure because partly it's giving back to you, but it also allows us to sell a story that things happen at Uniper that you will not find everywhere, at least not at the moment.
That's a good story. My last question, Damien, I wonder if you can, put your crystal ball in front of you. You've now, sort of achieved your vision of being client zero or customer zero and sort of having a use case that you've brought to life that you can now use to sort of prove out and, help the broader IT strategy inside of Uniper evolve. What do you think is next? What can you imagine in, especially in areas beyond disaster recovery, where will Uniper and AI go next together?
If we just stick on the current topic, I just came off another call where I found out that one of the other functions in the company wants to deploy a, let's call it a user ticketing system because employees an issue they want to ring up, and they're going off down the line of, oh, let's try and work out what the best ticketing system is for this use case. And I'm saying, but hang on, guys, I've just built all of this capability of at least deploying Gen AI, partly using Microsoft technology alongside the technology of ServiceNow. So for goodness sake, do we need a proliferation of systems, or do we pull it into one? So that's a really nice architecture discussion. I'm now telling the story inside, and I'm starting to see people queuing up saying, hang on, Damien. Yeah, we'd like to be customer 0.5. Can we do that? We also, almost a year ago, gave everybody in the organization Copilot. I find it fascinating that I get invited to different fora to explain to people why we did that. Most other organizations are, let's test and see. I don't want to test and see that. We've got 60% of the organization using this. Yeah, we'll help the other 40% catch up, but we're trying to move forward and get this thing going. And because we gave people Copilot from Microsoft a year ago, they're now coming back with more sophisticated use cases and saying, but can we do this and can we do this and can we do that? So yeah. I am convinced that AI, and at the moment, generative AI, is going to have a profound impact on the way knowledge workers like us work. And it's just my job to put my organization right at the forefront of that. We need to be braver. We need to be bolder. We need to have a little bit more fantasy sometimes. And that's why these stories help, because it motivates other people. And to my surprise, it's even less complicated than I expected it to be. So yes, there is efficiency to be got at, but that's kind of secondary. If we can just do our job better. You know, alone in my team, we don't have enough resources to do everything we want to do. Well, there you go. We free up resources to do some of this work, so that we then, as knowledge workers, get to start deploying this, the real intelligence, to get other things done. So it's my job is just to make sure UNIP is at the forefront of all of this, and that, you know, we have a capability that's better than the competitors. And with this use case, I'm just trying to motivate other people to come with me and prove the point. My expectation is that we will have a growing number of use cases that get deployed, that get talked about, and more get deployed and more gets talked about. And I just have to be careful as CIO that I don't end up with agentic chaos. But I think AI can help me there too.
We did a research report last year, and one of the things that we found was that with the efficiencies gained by AI, most organizations, you know, I think the fear has been, well, they're going to lay off a bunch of people. But the reality is that most, you know, leaders say that they actually want to use that to then find net new revenue streams and innovate. So I think your notion of being braver and bolder and having a bit of fantasy is right on. Damien, thank you so much for being with us today. It's really a true treat to have one of our customers come and talk about what's happening in the real world, really getting your hands dirty with AI. So thank you so very much for your time today. Really appreciate having you.
I would like to thank you also. It was very insightful. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for the conversation.